Right now, let's check in with SSU's political science professor. It's Dr. Dave McEwen. Dave, good to talk to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, anticipating the press conference between President Trump and Emmanuel Macron. And it's been said for decades, Dave, politics makes strange bedfellows. And here are two now.
Yes, exactly right. I mean, what you have is two fellows who, you know, Emmanuel Macron ran against Trumpism and against Donald Trump when he ran to be the leader of France. And then they certainly have become buddies, if you will. They have a very close personal relationship. They seem to get each other. And it couldn't be in some ways in more contrast. I mean, President Trump is 71 years old. Emmanuel Macron is 40 years old. He represents New Europe. You have a president who's trying to, you know, re-engineer and redo the Republican Party and re-engineer America. It really is a contrast in styles. But it also is an element of, with the first state dinner, the importance of France as a key U.S. ally. It sends a message to the Germans with the German leader, Angela Merkel, here later this week. It sends a message to the Brits, who assisted us as well as the French in Syria. It really is in some ways a new remaking of relationships with Europe, and that's exactly where President Trump wants to go and where Emmanuel Macron wants to be front and center in that.
And there are other things on the table, of course, but one of the differences I think is particularly striking is the collective versus the individual. When it comes to Emmanuel Trump, or excuse me, Emmanuel Macron, of course, I guess they are close. He spent so much time really talking about unifying Europe. And when it comes to President Trump, he spends a lot of time talking about, you know, America first. And not being a part of a lot of collective issues that are important to both the U.S. and Europe.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you look at kind of their press conference here just a few moments ago, the president was talking about the bilateral relationship with France and how strong that is in both a security sense and a trade sense, but with the barrier being that collective EU. And the EU being a problem for the United States and its negotiations to re-engineer, to redo trade relations, and things would be much easier. But the president faces this all across the world. He faces this in dealing with Japan. He faces this in looking at NAFTA. He faces this in terms of trying to get cooperation and redo the trade imbalances. But at the same time, we're dealing with these collective entities and these trade agreements. And that is a dramatic change for U.S. trade policy and U.S. foreign policy. It's a dramatic change in approach, and that's because the president is about a personal one-to-one transaction, about cutting a deal and what that deal looks like. If he only had to deal with Emmanuel Macron and maybe perhaps Kim Jong-un of North Korea, if it was just a one-to-one thing, that he believes he could solve all of the problems.
Yeah.
But it's a much more complicated and nuanced world and much more complicated relationship than that.
And other parts of the world, including Emmanuel Macron, wondering, why are you taxing us? We're your friends. We're your allies. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. And if you look at, you know, really sticky, difficult problems like North Korea, like Iran, which could be important with the confirmation of Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State. But you look at Syria and the difficulty of the Syrian situation, those three issues occupied a lot of their time today, most of that time being devoted to Iran and Syria. And the United States and France have been together on issues of Syria. But then you have the issue of Turkey being a NATO member and how they deal with problems on their southern border. It's a very difficult, tense situation with Russia looming over all of this.
Yeah.
And all of that portends difficulty down the road. But today, this week, it's certainly a love fest with the leader of France and the leader of the United States.
Absolutely. It is official business, and there's no questioning the table setup for sure for the state dinner tonight. And apparently, well, you know, Trump was incredibly impressed when he was in France at the invitation of Macron and was there during the celebration of Bastille Day. And hence, we have a military parade coming up in November. So that's happening. But you're right. There are other issues, including the possibility of the U.S. leaving the Iran nuclear deal. And I'm wondering, Dave, what you think about whether Macron has enough sway with Trump to change his mind on the Paris Climate Agreement?
Well, he certainly does. He certainly can get the United States to move to a position not so much of changing the president's mind to leave, but changing the president's mind about his negotiation approach. Rather than take all of our toys and go home, Macron's view and role is to push the United States to stay in negotiations. He has to convince his European friends that that's the best of a bad lot, but it isn't the United States walking away, but staying in the arena of negotiations. That would be a victory for Macron. It would be a victory for the Europeans, and it's something the United States and this president can live with because he wants to maintain that transactional one-to-one relationship and keeping the United States in the negotiating at the negotiating table over the Paris Accords, as opposed to just taking our toys and going home. That is something that Macron would see as a real victory, and his fellow brothers and sisters as leaders of Europe would do feel the same as well.
And speaking of negotiation, Dave, what about the potential summit between the U.S. and North Korea and the leaders of both? The news came out Friday afternoon, and I thought, wow, maybe this will really happen. Maybe there's something to it when North Korea said, okay, we're going to stop testing our nuclear missiles, et cetera, for now. Don't know if there's much weight to that, but at the time it seemed like a hopeful circumstance.
The president has certainly built up expectations and built up hope about what can be delivered with the North Koreans at this summit. And what the White House and the White House staff have to do, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders did this yesterday and last week, is they have to walk back some of these expectations. So one thing to pay attention to over the next couple of weeks into the month headed into this big summit is how the White House and the president diverge about setting expectations. The president this morning, the president last week, is setting forth and calling Kim Jong-un an honorable man. Now, he's going to meet with the South Korean leader. The South and North Korean leaders meeting, that will be a big deal. Certainly meeting with Abe last week in Japan, another big deal. But this gives all of America's allies in the area and across the world somewhat pause for characterizing the North Korean leader that way. And that's where the White House staff has to set some expectations with the press, with the public, and with public opinion more broadly or globally about what to expect out of that deal. Because if nothing happens or if the United States walks away, if the president feels he isn't getting a good deal, he said he'll just get up and leave, that puts us at a place that's much closer to confrontation, not less so, even though we have had these words which seem to be positive and on moving forward on a diplomatic solution as opposed to a solution predicated on force.
Well, aside from the fact that it is on American soil, I think it's a great idea for the two of them to meet on somewhat neutral ground in the Bohemian Grove outside of Montreal, because we don't really know who's going in and who's going out of there half the time, you know?
Yeah, that would be quite something. And there have been a wide smattering of venues. Switzerland's been talked about for obvious symbolic reasons. Vienna's been talked about. Singapore, Malaysia, different places have been talked about as possible meeting spots. So the symbolism of where they meet, why they meet in those areas, and how important that is, that will play a huge role, which probably leaves out the Bohemian Grove, but nonetheless, it could lead to another conspiracy theory about what actually happens out there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And switching gears here, well, we are talking about international issues, and so we must talk about the potential next Secretary of State. Mike Pompeo got through a hearing yesterday that it seemed for a while could go either way.
Yeah, certainly the president, again, in his transactional kind of relationships, moving Rand Paul, the senator from Kentucky, on a key vote to get out of committee, and Mike Pompeo does get out of committee 11-10. There are 50 votes, a little bit more than that, in the Senate. He'll be confirmed as U.S. Secretary of State. And then the really ramifications for that, the focus will quickly turn to what happens to the Iranian nuclear deal. Mike Pompeo has had a kind of force-based use. He's had a view of a very confrontational, strong use of diplomatic and security or armed forces and relations across the world. Is that enhanced by someone like John Bolton now at the NSC? This is a White House that is clearly moving in one direction while the president can talk about moving in another direction. And how does that spill out to other issues, not just Iran, but into Syria and more broadly into a Middle East peace process? And that will impact everything building up to North Korea and the deliverables from that. So the next 30 to 45 days, 30 to 60 days, with Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State, will be an absolutely critical area for the president to kind of reset, reimagine his foreign policy. Pompeo will have a huge view of that or a huge role in that, as will someone like John Bolton while the president moves forward.
And I think one of the challenging things to be an employee of President Trump is to be on the same page as President Trump. Probably no job description fills that particular need more than the Secretary of State. Secretary of State is there to really discuss, not just discuss, but be a staunch proponent for the president's stance across the land. And will Mike Pompeo be finally that guy to agree with Trump in each and every one?
Yeah, that's a very important dynamic, because what you're talking about is a set of people who have become favorable and then out of favor. Then you have Secretary of Defense General Mattis. How does General Mattis proceed? How does the Chief of Staff General Kelly proceed? Do we see an alignment of folks like Kelly and Mattis opposite folks like John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, the hawks versus the folks who are, say, somewhat less inclined to use force? How does that spin itself out moving forward?
Yeah.
And that is going to that game, team of rivals, which we sometimes talk about that presidents need. This is a clash of egos, not so much a team of rivals. And who is in favor and out of favor, and that palace intrigue has dominated the first 14 or 15 months of this administration. That is likely to continue as well while we face these very important issues.
I bet you're popular at cocktail parties, huh? Get a lot of invitations?
I get invitations. That's true. I'm
sure.
Try to make the rounds back.
And one more for you, maybe two more. What's wrong with Ronny Jackson, Trump's pick for the Veterans Administration?
Well, as we see moving forward, is when you look at the VA and how large it is, you have a guy who, now there are rumors coming out that maybe he drank too much on the job, maybe he made untoward advances, maybe he's not front and center ready for that job. And running the VA is really a career ender, it's not a career maker. So nominating someone that you have a personal transactional relationship, which the president did as Ronnie Jackson, Admiral Jackson being his personal physician, that is going to lead to a whole set of unintended consequences, things like his personal behavior and how he's acted even in a professional setting, things that he wasn't vetted for or ready to step up. That background work had not been done on Ronny Jackson, and now it's coming out, and that could sink his nominee. And then who does he go to next? Because running the VA is really such a difficult set of circumstances.
Yeah.
And it's too early to predict that Jackson is out, but Admiral Jackson could certainly be on the hot seat for the next 24 hours or so.
How tough is it to be a Republican right now?
Well, right now it's really tough if you're on the Hill because you're worried about losing seats. Average midterm loss in a midterm election, like we see, when presidential approval is less than 50%, it's 34 seats. Democrats need 24 seats. So Republicans are really worried that they are sinking. It's too early to predict that will happen. There is a core of Trump support that stays with him regardless of what happens. Do those folks show out? Show up and vote early and often this November? Will young people be out there because of what's happening with guns and their worry about violence and about race and the cultural divide in this country? All of that makes 2018 in the midterms a huge, huge election, let alone what's happening here in California and across our Mahone ballot here.
Well, appreciate your input all the time, Dave, and I don't blame you for getting all those cocktail party invitations. Thanks for being here this morning.
All right. Thank you for having me, and you can come with me.
All right. Sounds good.